Hello and welcome to the Swiss Info Programme. I'm Jo Fay. Here in Switzerland, if we need something delivered across the country, we usually turn to the roads, or maybe the rails. Traffic jams aside, it's the most efficient way to move things from place to place. But in Rwanda, a country two-thirds the size of Switzerland, with 1.5 times the people, there's no such thing as a road or rail network. Donkeys are a main form of transport. A man by the name of Jonathan Ledyard wants to change all of that by taking to the skies. A former Africa correspondent for The Economist magazine, Ledyard has intimate knowledge of the vast continent and the challenges it faces in the coming decades. He's now working to come up with creative solutions at Afrotech, a division of the Federal Institute of Technology in Lausanne. One of those solutions involves robots, drones to be more precise. Next year, the first batch of them will fly across Rwanda, bringing medical supplies to people who it would otherwise take days to reach. These flying donkeys, as the drones have come to be known, will launch from a network of high-tech drone ports around the country. Swiss Info's Veronica DeVore recently went to visit Jonathan Ledyard in Lausanne to find out more about his vision for Africa and those donkeys in the sky.
We meet over coffee in a corner of the sprawling campus known as the EPFL Innovation Park. On a foggy winter day, it's hard to imagine the lush grasslands and hills of Rwanda, or drones flying over them, for that matter. But that's all that's been on Jonathan Ledyard's mind lately.
What we want to do with our cargo drone is basically take a Volkswagen Beetle and mate it with a Star Wars fighter, and you end up with something which is really cheap, really practical, high performance, but looks super cool. You know, half the population in most African countries is under the age of 18. And those young people, in my experience, they want Star Wars. They want the future. If you can imagine, it will look like a large bird, but going to have LED lights at the back. So I think it will be really, really cool.
And why Rwanda? Why that particular country in Africa?
We get land, we get airspace, we get a very supportive government, we have a very good relationship with the National University of Rwanda, so we can get young Rwandan and East African engineers in on the project. And then, you know, we want to get a law code. No one in the world has a law code or has even thought about a law code for cargo drones. And we want to develop a law code which is simple, safe, secure, and which could be applied in many, many other countries. In poorer countries where the road system is not going to get built out.
In such a law code, what would be maybe 3 or 4 main points that you would want to have?
What we'd like to see in the law code is just very, very simple laws around sense and avoid technology. Every drone should be able to sense where it's going and avoid even the bird, avoid a power line, avoid a tree, and obviously avoid any other aircraft. We want to have kind of fixed routes. If you can imagine taking a railway line, a small Swiss railway line, and sticking it 400 meters into the sky, that's really our conception for the technology. We're thinking about fixed-wing craft, which would get up to 7 or 8 meter wingspan, so like a really super large eagle. And they really fly like a bird of prey, you know. They have very quiet, very beautiful, and they're carrying quite a lot of payload. So we want a law which is conditioned around this idea that every town has a drone port, and these craft can fly in and out of that in a safe and secure way.
You state that Africa is growing too fast to build out its road network. Can you explain what that means and what it means for the drone project?
Well, I think here in Switzerland, we could really understand it very clearly. If you imagine a canton like Graubünden, or where you didn't have any tunnels, didn't have any bridges, you still have roads, but every road's going to have to go way up over the mountain and way down the other side. So what we have in the African context is we know objectively in the next 20 years, the population is going to double again, the economies are going to grow 3 or 4 times, but there won't be any bridges, any tunnels, hardly any motorways, and not many bypasses around the city. It's going to be slow and expensive and difficult to move physical goods around. When we think about flying robots carrying stuff, we mustn't think of it in a Silicon Valley way of massive disruption. We are not going to put the motorbike out of business, or the pickup truck, or the lorry, and you really need railways if you can get them. But you can supplement with high speed, very, very low cost. You can fly straight over that mountain or over that lake or up that river in a way that was not possible before.
And the name of your project is The Red Line. Why did you choose that name?
Well, and the first use case was and is the transshipment of blood. In the African context, many, many countries have real big issues with distributing blood to more remote clinics and hospitals. We wanted to start with a use case which was demonstrably able to save lives of small children, women who are dying in childbirth. What you tend to find in Africa is if you've got anemia or if you had a major trauma of any kind, you're going to die because there's just not enough blood available. So for us, Red Line is a kind of vital line. It's an emergency network to begin with, which is serving emergency needs. But obviously that will transition to a commercial need quite quickly, I think.
In terms of the actual logistics of this project, could you describe the drone ports that you'll be using? What will they look like and who will be working there? And if someone were to come across one of these in the countryside in Rwanda, what would they see?
First of all, a drone port is a point where ground touches sky and sky touches ground. So if you were to look at the drone port, you're actually going to see these beautiful creatures flying in and out, gliding in and out. Second thing is, it's quite a large building. It will have a civic presence in the town. In most of those towns in Africa that I'm talking about, there probably isn't a civic building in the entire town. There might be a Catholic church or a mosque. That's it. So the drone port will be quite a significant building in the town. And then it'll have this multiple use. So there's obviously the drone element and the repair of the drones, some sort of 3D printing shop where you can amend the airframes, and other people start to bring in new technologies to get repaired and so on. And then there's the medical element, which interfaces with the local hospital. And then there's this large kind of commercial element where people are sending and receiving packages, and there are kind of attendant businesses, maybe agricultural outreach, mobile phone companies and so on and so forth. So we want it to be kind of a bustling place. Of course, for the next few decades, it's hard to imagine that these drones will be carrying humans, So there's a kind of unmanned element to it, which nobody really knows how that's going to play out. But we see them as highly vibrant commercial hubs.
You're going to have people on the ground in the summer of 2016, putting this into practice, building the drone port. So you must have a sense of how this will be received kind of immediately when this group of primarily Swiss people lands there, comes in, starts building this futuristic-looking drone port. What do you expect some of the reactions to be? Do you have any fears or any worries about how that might be received by the people in the area?
As a species, we really are not used to looking above our heads. And I think instinctively, within our animal sense, we don't like the idea of unmanned craft going over our head. And so I think there is a possibility that people might just think, actually, we don't want this. Maybe it has some benefit, maybe it's beautiful and all the rest, but we don't want it. But I'm pretty optimistic that won't be the case. But we are hiring anthropologists, and obviously the community outreach is the critical element in the success of this project, But that is a longer-term, day-in, day-out process. What happens when your first airframe crashes into a farm? How do you deal with that situation, What happens when a local leader for his or her own reasons, says that no, this is a dangerous technology which is related to spying or something like that. You have to deal with all of those things, but what I understand is the aspirations of young Africans are to get an education and hold down the job and to have a little bit of money at the end of the month where they can actually buy a couple of things and feel a little bit happier about life. And we feel that the Red Line project and flying robots carrying stuff is just another positive contribution in the way that mobile money is and improved healthcare and many other initiatives.
That was my colleague Veronica DeVore speaking to author and entrepreneur Jonathan Ledyard in Lausanne. From donkeys in the sky, we now turn to cattle in the Alps, specifically the kinds you don't see around very much anymore. Another project at Lausanne's Federal Technology Institute has involved looking at livestock breeds from around the world. Researchers want to figure out which ones are in danger of dying out due to problems such as overbreeding, climate change, or disease. Some farmers in Switzerland have taken that research to heart, choosing to raise rare breeds on their farms instead of the traditional types of Swiss cows usually seen in the Alps. Swissinfo.ch recently paid a visit to one of those farms that's trying to bring back rare livestock. Adriana Stettler is busy in the stable, taking care of the daily chores. She and her husband live on a farm just outside of Bern, with a stunning view of the Alpine foothills. The farm is also home to 20 rare breed cows, of a variety known as Evolena.
We have three children and a small farm with Evelyn cattle. I originally studied biology. Then we built up this farm together and decided to raise rare species of animals with the organization Pro Spezia Rara.
Evolena, she says, are either red in color or black and white. Often they have a white star-shaped pattern on their foreheads and white feet and stomachs. Apart from their markings, they're also smaller than other cows and live longer because of their high fertility rate and other genetic traits. But they're not always as tame as other cows, taking every opportunity to playfully, but sometimes a little aggressively, clank their trademark horns against each other. So raising them is a labour of love.
The cows are our side business. My husband works full-time as well. We do make some money off it, but the profits aren't huge. You need to enjoy it and have a certain degree of idealism for it to be worth it.
During the last century, about 16% of livestock breeds died out, and 15% became endangered as a result of selective breeding. If those more robust rare breeds aren't preserved, experts say many key traits may be lost that'll help livestock adjust to future environmental challenges. But preserving them isn't easy, as most commercial farms opt for more modern varieties bred for top milk production.
These types of cows come from earlier times, so they've developed to be more robust and produce milk even in difficult conditions. These factors are genetic, and if the breed is lost, those traits will be as well.
Stettler says she and her husband would like to contribute to there being 2,000 to 3,000 heads of rare cattle in Switzerland. That's their goal. To bring the species to a point where they can continue to live on and contribute their unique traits to the animal kingdom. To see these cattle in action and to read more about rare species and how they're being raised in Switzerland, visit our website, swissinfo.ch. Thanks for listening, and thanks to studio technician Daniel Wieler. I'm Jo Fay, and this programme was produced by Veronica DeVore.